This is Fresh Air. With each day that goes by, the breakup of the Soviet Union seems more inevitable. To understand why the Soviet Empire is coming apart, it helps to understand how it was formed. So we asked Richard Pipes for a history lesson. Pipes is a history professor at Harvard University and the author of more than 10 books on the Soviet Union, including the 1954 book, The Formation of the Soviet Union, and the 1990 book, The Russian Revolution. Pipe says it's important to remember that the empire predates the communist revolution. The Russian Empire was created by the Tsars.
It was a very large empire, the largest landlocked empire in the world. It began, one may say, in the 16th century, at the same time when the national state was being built, and it grew at an extremely rapid rate. I calculated that sometime in the 17th century, Russia conquered each year territory equivalent of Holland. So it was, by the end of the 17th century, the largest state in the world. And indeed, it was a multinational empire and not a unitary state. And the Soviet Empire, which followed, was built on its ruins.
Was there ever anything under the Tsars that's similar to what we're seeing today? Nationalist struggles, republics or states trying to break away?
It varied tremendously, say, a century ago. The only ones that really struggled to break away were the Poles, who, of course, were a great people with a great history, and the Finns, to a lesser extent, the Baltic peoples. The national movement, however, really exploded in 1917 during the revolution, and I described it in my first book, The Formation of the Soviet Union. It was astonishing how within a few months after the Tsar abdicated, almost all the nationalities begin to make demands, some for absolute independence, others for self-rule, autonomy, and so on. And some, those which receive Western support, particularly on the western borders of the empire, that is Finland, the three Baltic republics, and Poland, managed to gain independence for 20 years. The others were all conquered by the Red Army, one by one, and incorporated into the Soviet state.
You know, you'd think that the idea of empire and, imperialism would have been antithetical to the original idea behind the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, you're quite right, and indeed that's why I devoted myself to this subject in my early career as a scholar, because I began to do my doctoral dissertation at Harvard in 1948, and this was the height of Russian chauvinism under Stalin. And I asked myself the question, how is it that a country based on Marxism, which is very anti-nationalistic, should have developed such a high degree of nationalism? But then it emerged in the course of my study, which led to my first book, which came out first in 1954, that Lenin, in a sense, paid lip service to the rights of nationalities. But in fact, though he was not a great Russian nationalist, nevertheless, or chauvinist, nevertheless thought in terms of building a worldwide empire of socialist states, and he just couldn't tolerate the separation of these various regions, in particular because they had very important natural and economic resources. For example, petroleum, the only petroleum Russia had in 1917 and the early 1920s was in the Caucasus, which was independent, iron and coal and food in the Ukraine, cotton in Central Asia, and so on and so forth. He needed these resources, and he simply paid no attention to the demands of these people. He created phony local governments, so-called national governments, which were really run by the communists, as happened in Afghanistan a few years ago. And then these governments called for help. The Red Army, Red Army would march in, and the area would be incorporated.
How would you compare how the different nationalities fared under early communism to how they fared under the Tsar?
Well, on the whole, they fared much better under the Tsars because the Tsars did not really interfere with them. There was oppression in Poland to some extent. The Jews were discriminated against. Ukrainian language was in some ways persecuted. But by and large, the Tsarist government was a very distant government. It did not interfere very much with the life of ordinary people. Now, what did Lenin do? Lenin recognized the national rights on paper and gave them a fraudulent statehood. But he could give him that because he introduced the Communist Party as the real power lever. And the Communist Party was united, centralized, based in Moscow, and under Russian rule. So you had this facade of ethnic republics and the reality of Russian rule through the Communist Party. That party then began to interfere in the life of all the nationalities in a very vicious way, in a way Tsarism never would have dreamt of. Censorship, for example, was imposed on everything. And every manifestation of local pride, of ethnicity, was castigated as bourgeois nationalism and savagely persecuted. And there were tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people who perished as a result of this persecution, in the Ukraine particularly, but also in the other republics.
You know, you're talking about all signs of ethnic identity being, you know, seen as bourgeois, but all the groups were able to keep their own languages, which is really interesting.
Well, he granted them languages, and he granted them folklore and a few other things, in lieu of granting them real self-rule. See, originally, when Lenin took power, he said there will be no national rights at all, that the ethnic minorities have a choice of either staying in the Russian Republic and assimilating, or separating themselves and forming independent states. And he established this rule on the assumption that they will not want to separate, because he thought the economic interest would require them to stay with Russia. When in fact they did separate in 1917, he then had to reverse himself and give them the kind of cultural autonomy, language, and so on, which he wasn't willing to give before, in lieu, as compensation, for the loss of the right of national self-determination to form independent states.
You were talking about things that Lenin instituted for the Soviet Republic, and things got even worse with Stalin.
They got even worse with Stalin, but the bases were laid by Lenin. The Soviet Union was created under Lenin. Lenin had some disagreements with Stalin, which I describe. They weren't really disagreements of substance. They were disagreements of manner, of style. Lenin wanted to treat the minorities with a certain amount of deference. He wanted them totally under his rule, but he felt that their feelings should be spared. And Stalin said, I don't see any point in that. And being himself a Russified Georgian, he wanted to identify himself with Russian nationalism. But fundamentally, it was Lenin who laid down the basis of that prison of nations, as it came to be known.
My guest is Harvard history professor Richard Pipes. We'll talk more about the creation and the collapse of the Soviet Empire after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Just joining us, we're getting a little history lesson in the creation of the Soviet Empire so we could better understand what looks like its dissolution. And my guest is historian Richard Pipes. He's a professor of history at Harvard University and author of over 10 books on the Soviet Union, including his latest, The Russian Revolution. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the advantages that the Soviet Union saw itself as having by being really large?
They had a rather sort of primitive notion. I think it's based on a sort of peasant culture. The greater you are, the more land you have, the bigger, the richer you are. Now, you know, a very large proportion of what is the Soviet Union is really wasteland. Much of Siberia, much of Central Asia, is totally economically useless. And this continuous stress on expansion and controlling vast areas has really, over the long run, impoverished Russia. They, I think, are now beginning to realize it. But for a long time, the notion was that the larger the state, the mightier it is. It was a mistake, I think.
Do you think that the issues of Soviet rule have been different for the Slavic than the Asian republics over the years?
Yes, there was a feeling among Russian communists that Belarusians and Ukrainians are really brothers. And there's they speak very related languages, they have the same religion, they look alike, and there's a lot of intermarriage between them. Whereas if you contrast the Slavs with the other nationalities, there are big differences. I mean, you know, a Russian and a Georgian have no more in common than you might say an American and a Korean. They're just totally different civilizations. No similarity whatsoever. And the same thing applies to Russians or Ukrainians and Muslims of Central Asia.
Now, yesterday, the Russian Republic issued a statement that warned other Soviet republics that Russia would not let them secede from the Union if they took areas with them of large Russian populations. And a spokesperson for Boris Yeltsin said, if these republics enter the Union with Russia, it's not a problem. But if they leave the Union, we must take care of the Russian population that lives there and not forget that these lands were settled by Russians. Would you interpret that for us?
Well, that's very bad news, I think, because in response to the president of the Kazakh Republic, which has a very large Russian minority, responded, if the Russians insisted that there will be war. I think it's a great mistake, because it sort of reminds you a little bit of Hitler making the demands that all Germans living in areas contiguous to Germany should be part of Germany, which led, of course, to the incorporation first of Austria and then of the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia. It's a very pernicious idea.
What are the Russian fears about Russian minorities in non-Russian republics?
It depends on which. I don't think they have much fear in Ukraine or Belarusia. I don't think they have too much fear in the Baltic countries, because there was a referendum in Latvia some time ago, and half the Russian population voted for Latvian independence. I think where they are afraid is in the Muslim areas, where the population is basically very hostile to them. And there has been, over the past couple of years, a mass migration of Russians from these areas. They've been pulling up the stakes and moving back to Russia. And I think if this movement towards independence continues, you'll see a mass exodus of Russians, Ukrainians, and Belarusians from the Muslim areas. But that's really the one area, the only areas where they have a problem.
Do you think that there might be a war between the republics over ethnicity?
Well, you could have it, yeah. And it's very bad news. I should have thought the Russians would have more maturity than that. They have enough land. They really don't need to take chunks of Kazakhstan.
Many of the Soviet republics were really never independent. Is that right? I mean, that they've always been part of one empire or another?
The eastern ones have not, but it varies, you know. Certainly the western ones were. We mentioned the three Baltic republics, mentioned Finland, Poland. They certainly have been. You go to the Caucasus, Georgia and Armenia have a history going back 2,000 years. They were independent kingdoms before you had any independent states in Europe. They're very, very ancient civilizations. So I cannot generalize, but I would say that probably more of these areas have been independent than not.
Is there another model in a different part of the world that's at all comparable to what the Soviets are going through now?
No, there isn't really, and this for several reasons. One is that it's the only landlocked empire. All the other empires were overseas. That is, Europe, because of its geographic configuration, had to build empires by traversing seas, going over the Atlantic into Africa and to Far East. So there was no really common frontier. Russia, because it is a landlocked state, developed along its frontier. It's a little bit like the Persian Empire and a bit like the Roman Empire. So, but there's a fundamental difference. There's no other empire like that today. Secondly, because of communism. The nature of the communist state was very different from that of any other state. And it's much more difficult for them to let go than was it for Britain to let go of its empire.
Let me ask you, we're all trying so hard to really understand what's happening now in the Soviet Union. Is there anything else you know so much, so I'll ask you to just like choose a point or two that you really think we ought to think about in trying to understand what's happening now and why the empire is splitting apart. Is there any other like particular focus you'd like to give us historically in the creation of the empire that would help us understand why it's splitting apart now?
I think one has to think in historical and comparative terms. That, first of all, if you acknowledge that Russia is an empire, and has been really from all its history, in fact, until 1917 it was called an empire, then you have to think of the fate of other empires. And the fact is that in the second half of the 20th century, all other empires have dissolved. And there is no particular valid reason why, not only moral reason, but practical reason, why the Soviet Empire should escape the same fate. So if you look at it this way, you say to yourself, well, here is the last empire in the world, and it's almost certainly going to suffer the fate of the other empires. And we were in favor of the breakup of the British Empire, the French Empire, the Dutch Empire, the Portuguese Empire, and we should definitely be in favor of the breakup of the Russian Empire. It creates less of a large state which can menace us, a Russia shorn of his republics, could be less menacing. Although there is a possibility of instability until frontiers and other issues are settled, in the long run, I think granting people the right of self-determination is a very stabilizing right.
How concerned are you that there will be suppression of ethnic minorities within independent republics?
Well, there will be a bit of that, I think. There are animosities. You see it in the Caucasus particularly here and there. But, you know, you've had it everywhere. I mean, when India got its independence, we had a frightful struggle between Muslims and Hindus. And yet I don't know of anybody who came up and said, oh, because there's going to be this struggle, we shouldn't give them independence. Yeah, there will be some adjustments, and they may be rather costly in some cases. But in the long run, I think this is a wholesome development.
Richard Pipes, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
Richard Pipes is a professor of history at Harvard University. His latest book is The Russian Revolution. This is Fresh Air.